They see the knife first, a short blade, a man in the street, voices sharp with urgency, patrol cars angled for cover. Then they see his legs, or what is missing. Anthony Lowe is on the ground, both legs gone. He moves with his hands, pushing forward, slow, uneven, still coming. Commands stack on top of each other. Drop it. Stop. Don't move. The distance closes anyway, not fast, not charging. Just forward. Hands, shoulders, breath. This is Huntington Park, California. January 26, 2023, late morning. Body cameras running. Neighbors watching from behind windows and parked cars. Second stretch. Options narrow. Fear hardens. Then gunfire cracks the air. When it stops, Lowe is motionless. The knife is still there. The street goes quiet. Within hours, the questions begin. Why deadly force? Why not distance? Why not time? Why not something else? This death will not stay contained to this block. It will move through footage, policy, protest, and courtrooms. And it will force a country to look hard at what threat really means. Chapter 1, The Contact. The call comes in just before noon, a man with a knife in the street. Location, Huntington Park, California. Residential block, neighbors report shouting, no shots fired, no injuries yet. Patrol cars arrive within minutes. Red and blue light spill across parked vehicles and storefront windows. Officers step out already scanning hands and distance. The street is narrow, houses close in. There is nowhere wide to retreat. They see him quickly. Anthony Lowe is on the ground. He is missing both legs above the knee. He is upright on his hands, torso angled forward. A knife is visible. Short blade, gripped in his right hand. This is not a chase. There is no running. There is movement, but it is slow and uneven. Lowe advances by planting his palms, lifting his weight, and dragging himself forward. Each push takes effort. Each pause brings breath. Officers issue commands, loud, repeated, drop the knife, stop moving, stay back. Body cameras are on. The footage later will show overlapping voices and quick repositioning. One officer moves left to widen the angle. Another steps back to maintain distance. A third stays near the patrol car door, using it as partial cover. The environment tightens everything. The street does not offer open space. Parked cars line both sides. A chain-link fence runs along 1 yard. There is no clear path that guarantees separation without retreating into traffic or turning blind corners. Lowe keeps moving. He does not sprint, he does not rush, but the distance closes. A few feet at a time, hands pressed to asphalt, shoulders tense, the knife stays in his grip. Officers continue commands, voices sharpen, tone rises. This is the first pressure point. A man armed with a knife is advancing. Officers are trained on distance, on reaction time, on edged weapon risk. A blade at close range can be lethal in seconds. Training emphasizes space, control, barriers. But this situation does not match clean scenarios. Lowe cannot stand, he cannot run, he cannot lunge in a traditional sense, yet he is still armed, still moving forward, still non-compliant. One officer steps backward again. Another adjusts stance, firearm up, finger indexed. The patrol car door remains half open, but the angle is wrong. It blocks retreat more than it protects. Neighbors begin to gather at a distance. Some record on phones, others watch from porches. The scene tightens under observation. Commands repeat, drop it, stop, get on the ground. Lowe is already on the ground. He advances another foot, then another. The blade flashes briefly as his hand shifts. The distance is now measured in yards, then feet. An officer shouts that he is coming closer. The warning is audible on body camera. The voice carries strain. This is where options compress. Time shrinks. There is no visible, less lethal tool deployed. No taser is fired. No baton engagement occurs. The distance is already close enough that a failed attempt could mean contact. The movement continues. Then the shots. Gunfire breaks the tension in sharp bursts. The sound echoes off nearby houses. Lowe collapses forward. The knife falls near his hand. Officers hold position, weapons trained, scanning for movement. Commands continue even after the shots. Hands, don't move. Silence settles unevenly. Medical aid is requested. Officers approach cautiously. The knife is secured. Lowe is unresponsive. Paramedics arrive. Efforts are made. The street fills with more units. Yellow tape stretches across the block. Anthony Lowe is pronounced dead at the scene. Within minutes, the scene transitions. What was an active threat call becomes a death investigation. Supervisors arrive, the perimeter expands, officers involved are separated, the body cameras keep recording. The first official statement is short. Police say officers encountered an armed suspect who advanced toward them. They say lethal force was used to stop the threat. They say the incident is under investigation, but the details already complicate that summary. Witnesses mention his missing legs. Video begins circulating. Viewers see the same thing officers saw, a man on the ground, moving slowly, holding a knife. Questions begin almost immediately, not shouted yet, just forming. Why deadly force? Why not distance? Why not time? Those questions do not belong to this moment yet. Right now, the focus remains procedural. The scene is documented, evidence markers are placed, the knife is photographed, shell casings are logged, distances are measured. Investigators note the layout, the parked cars, the fences, the narrow roadway. They mark where officers stood and where Lowe was when shots were fired. Each measurement matters later. At this stage, facts are gathered without conclusion. No judgments, no findings, just the record. The officers involved are placed on administrative leave as standard procedure. They give initial statements. Full interviews will come later. The Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office is notified. An independent review will follow. For now, the block returns to quiet. Tape comes down, patrol cars leave, neighbors remain, talking in low voices. The pressure that built in seconds does not dissipate as quickly. Anthony Lowe's name begins to spread beyond Huntington Park, first through local news, then through social media. The phrase double amputee appears in headlines. The phrase police shooting follows close behind. But inside the timeline, inside this first chapter of events, only a few things are fixed. A man with a knife, a confined street, a closing distance. Everything else remains unresolved. The central question is not answered here. It is only formed. Was there another way to end this moment without ending a life? That question will drive everything that follows. Chapter 2, The Scrutiny. The name comes next. Anthony Lowe. Age 36, resident of the area, known to local outreach workers, known to hospitals, known to the street, in a way that never makes it into dispatch notes. The medical detail lands hard once confirmed, both legs amputated above the knee, the result of a prior medical emergency tied to infection and substance use. This is not speculation. It is documented history. It explains the posture seen on video. It explains the movement pattern that viewers cannot ignore. It also reframes the threat in the public mind. Before the shooting earlier that same morning, Lowe had been involved in a separate incident. A stabbing is reported, one man injured, that victim survives. Lowe is named as the suspect. This fact becomes central to how law enforcement frames the risk, an armed suspect who had already used a knife, not just a man, holding one. This detail is confirmed later by police statements and investigative summaries. It is not known to the officers at first contact in full detail, but the dispatch includes a man with a knife. That alone is enough to elevate response posture. Body camera footage is released within days, edited first, then later, longer segments. The footage becomes the focal point of national attention. Viewers see what the outline already established. Lowe on the ground, Lowe moving forward with his hands, Lowe holding a knife. They also hear tone, breathing, overlap in commands, officers sounding uncertain but urgent, no single calm voice taking control, no obvious de-escalation rhythm. Public reaction sharpens. Advocates point to his disability. They argue that a double amputee moving slowly does not match standard deadly force scenarios. They question why distance was not maintained, why less lethal options were not deployed, why time was not used as a tool. Law enforcement responses focus on proximity and unpredictability. A knife does not require speed to be deadly at close range. Reaction windows shrink to fractions of a second. Training emphasizes that edged weapons are especially dangerous within short distances. This becomes the pivot point, two frameworks colliding. One views the scene through capability and vulnerability, the other through risk and training doctrine. The Huntington Park Police Department places the involved officers on paid administrative leave. This is standard. It is not a finding. It is procedural. Still, it carries symbolic weight. An independent investigation is announced. The Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office will review the shooting. Internal Affairs will conduct a parallel review. The California Department of Justice is notified. Officials emphasize patience. Investigations take time. Evidence must be reviewed. Statements must be collected. Meanwhile, protests begin. They are not massive at first, dozens, then hundreds. Signs reference disability, policing, use of force. Some protests are calm, others end with tense standoffs between demonstrators and police lines. Anthony Lowe's family speaks publicly. They describe a man who struggled, a man who needed help, a man who could not run. They demand accountability. Attorneys enter the picture. Civil rights lawyers review footage frame by frame. They begin preparing wrongful death claims. This is not yet a lawsuit. It is groundwork. Media coverage intensifies. National outlets replay the footage. Pundits argue across split screens. Former officers explain training. Advocates counter with policy language about de-escalation and proportionality. Through all of this, the investigation continues quietly. Investigators reconstruct the scene. They analyze distances. They time the advance. They calculate how long it took Lowe to move specific lengths. They map officer positions relative to parked cars and obstacles. They also examine equipment, whether tasers were available, whether beanbag shotguns or other less lethal tools were nearby, whether there was time to transition. This is where complexity deepens. Less lethal options are not guaranteed solutions. Tasers fail, probes miss, thick clothing interferes, pain compliance does not always stop determined movement. At close range, a failed attempt can eliminate remaining options. Investigators also review training records, what officers were taught about edged weapon threats, about distance thresholds, about decision-making under stress. None of this resolves the moral weight. It only builds the technical picture. The question evolves, not just whether lethal force was justified, but whether the situation was managed in a way that made lethal force inevitable. Did the initial approach box officers in? Did communication fail? Did policy provide enough guidance for a case involving severe disability? These are not conclusions. They are investigative lines. The district attorney's office remains silent publicly while reviewing evidence. This silence frustrates the public. It is interpreted by some as avoidance, by others as necessary restraint. Civil rights organizations release statements. Disability advocacy groups join the discussion. They argue that law enforcement training rarely accounts for disabled suspects in meaningful ways. They call for policy reform. Inside the department, officers feel the pressure as well. They are not speaking publicly, but the climate is tense. No one wants to be the next headline. No one wants to hesitate and die. No one wants to pull the trigger and live with it forever. The midpoint of this chapter is not a revelation. It is a realization. This case cannot be resolved by a single frame of video or a single sentence from policy manuals. It sits at the intersection of fear, training, disability, and public trust. By the end of the second phase, the shooting is no longer just an incident. It is a symbol. Different groups project different meanings onto it. Some see failure, some see inevitability, some see both. What remains unanswered is the official determination whether the shooting will be ruled legally justified, whether charges will be filed, whether policy will change. The pressure does not release, it builds. Because the findings are coming, and when they do, they will not satisfy everyone. The case has passed the point of quiet closure. It is now waiting for judgment. Chapter 3, the findings. The review takes months. That is not unusual. Officer-involved shootings move slowly by design. Evidence must be complete. Statements must align with recorded facts. Every decision is measured against law, policy, and precedent. The Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office releases its determination in stages. First, through confirmation that the review is complete, then through a written summary. The conclusion is clear. Criminal charges will not be filed against the officers involved. The reasoning follows established legal standards. Investigators determine that Anthony Lowe was armed with a knife and continued advancing toward officers despite repeated commands. They conclude that officers reasonably perceived an imminent threat of serious bodily injury or death. Under California law, that perception meets the threshold for lawful use of deadly force. The finding rests on proximity, not speed. The analysis emphasizes that edged weapons can be lethal at close range regardless of how quickly a person moves. The report states that Lowe's physical disability did not eliminate the danger posed by the knife once distance collapsed. This conclusion does not claim perfection, it claims legality. The district attorney's office does not say the outcome was ideal. It does not say policy could not be improved. It says only that the officer's actions did not meet the standard for criminal prosecution. The internal affairs review follows a similar path. Policy violations are not sustained. Training compliance is confirmed. The officers are cleared to return to duty. For law enforcement leadership, the case closes on paper. For the public, it does not. Anthony Lowe's family responds within hours. They reject the findings. They describe the decision as predictable and unjust. Attorneys announce plans to move forward with a civil lawsuit. Civil court uses a different standard. Preponderance of evidence, not beyond a reasonable doubt. Wrongful death claims do not require criminal guilt. They require showing that actions were unreasonable under the circumstances. That case moves forward quietly. Filings, depositions, expert witnesses. It does not dominate headlines the way the shooting did, but it remains active. Community trust continues to erode. Advocates argue that legality is not the same as accountability. They point to policy gaps, to training that emphasizes threat response without equal emphasis on disability awareness, to scenarios where distance is treated as a countdown rather than a resource. Law enforcement officials respond with caution. They acknowledge the need for continued training. They emphasize that officers cannot gamble with their lives. They stress that hesitation in knife encounters has killed officers in the past. Both sides cite real deaths. Both sides claim to be protecting lives. Policy discussions begin at the margins. Some departments review use of force language related to disabled suspects. Others expand crisis intervention training. These changes are incremental. They do not rewrite the system overnight. Anthony Lowe's name becomes part of a longer list. Cases that are cited in training sessions, in court filings, in advocacy reports. His image remains fixed in public memory. A man on the ground, moving forward, a knife in hand, a disability that complicates every frame. The unresolved questions linger. Could officers have disengaged sooner? Could containment have replaced confrontation? Could time have created another outcome? The official findings do not answer those questions. They are not designed to. They answer a narrower one. Were the officers justified under the law as it exists? The answer is yes. The cost of that answer is harder to measure. Anthony Lowe is dead. His family lives with that fact. Officers involved live with the memory of the moment the trigger was pulled. A community lives with the image of police killing a man who could not stand. None of those outcomes are erased by a legal ruling. The case exposes a tension that modern policing has not resolved. How to respond decisively to danger without defaulting to fatal outcomes. How to apply training built for able-bodied threats to bodies that do not fit the model. In the aftermath, the street where Lowe died looks the same. Cars park where they always did. People walk past without stopping. The tape is long gone. But the pressure remains in policy rooms and public meetings, in training academies, in body camera footage used as cautionary examples. Anthony Lowe's death is now a reference point. Not because it was unique, but because it forced an uncomfortable question into the open. What does threat mean when vulnerability is visible? The system answered with law. The public answered with doubt. Both answers coexist. Neither resolves the other. The final line of the official report closes the case file. The final line of the story does not close at all.